Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce the Vice President of the United States, Joseph Biden.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, a new world order, because the global order is changing again.
I believe we, and particularly you, your class, has an incredible window of opportunity to lead in shaping a new world order for the 21st century, a new world order for the 21st century, in a way consistent with American interests and the common interest.
And what he means by the New World Order, they're just ushering in the Old World Order. Greetings and welcome to Mystery Babylon News Radio on Tuesday, the 28th of October in 2014. My name is Walt Stickle, and I'll be your host for the next 45 minutes. The title of tonight's broadcast is The Jesuit Brothers of the Pyramid Shaping Events in 2014. I was really inspired the other night by listening to another talk show host. His name is Alan Bailey, and Alan Bailey's talk show is on Bald Eagle. You go to TalkShoe, put in Bald Eagle, all one word, and you'll come to Restoring America, his name of his call. Then you scroll down to 144, episode 144, and he is reading out of John Daniel's book, The Jesuit Brothers of the Pyramid, Shaping Events During the 1700s. Well, we're going to go a little bit backward in our discussion here and look at the events that are happening in 2014 and how they're so pertinent to 1700. I want to lay a little foundation before we listen and discuss Alan Bailey's broadcast on TalkShoe. It really inspired me, because one of the hardest things to do is when you read is to paint a picture, and you might be able to read something, but are you comprehending what you read? And Alan Bailey was a minister for 33 years. He's been a pastor, so he's given many sermons. And so when he started this chapter, The Jesuit Brothers of the Pyramid Shaping Events During the 1700s, that's a long title. But that's also an introduction to founding of America. So I strongly urge that when you have time, that you go to TalkShoe, Bald Eagle, and listen to episode 144. You'll find it very, very informative. Now, tonight's broadcast is, I want to mention the book Washington in the Lap of Rome in 1888 by Justin Fulton. It was written in 1888, and Chris Pinto republished it. And he it's up there on my website, Grand Design Exposed. I strongly urge everyone to have a copy of this book. What Chris Pinto did is he wrote a 70-page forward to the book. Now, the book was out of print, and you know, and he put it back into print. It's just the old book, but he wrote a 70-page forward, and it is riveting. It is a riveting read, and I also, if you go, this is going to be on Blog Talk, and there'll be a link to the text that's going to be read tonight. And Tom Fress of Inquisition Update read this back in April of 2011. Now, this is a riveting read, but I think Tom makes it a very riveting listen. And so tonight's broadcast is going to be, I'm going to have a series of broadcasts, and Tom has already done this. It's up on the internet in the Inquisition Update in the archives. But Tom is going to read this forward because it'll bring us up to date of what is happening in 2014, and our present time. Because that's what is so, what really is like a revelation when I listen to Alan Bailey read the 10th chapter of John Daniel's book. It's because you're going to see the formation of the 1700s and how it's affected us in 2014. And before, in this series of broadcasts, I'm going to play in its entirety. I'm going to play when Alan Bailey said on TalkShoe. But before we do this, I want us to do our own research a little bit. I want to create enough interest that you'll do some research on your own. And I can't think of a better introduction than the foreword that Chris Pinto wrote when he republished the book, Washington in the Lap of Rome, 1888, by Justin Fulton. I mean, this is a riveting read. And if you don't even read the whole book, if you read the 70, just the foreword will make you want to read the whole book. So with that, I'm going to start, and here's Tom Fress starting to read the foreword of Washington in the Lap of Rome in 1888 by Justin Fulton.
I'm going to begin by reading the back flap of the book, which sets the tone for this book and should spark interest. Washington in the Lap of Rome, 1888. It begins with a quote, "Romanism is the dominant power in the capital of the United States," unquote. In 1888, a man named Justin Dewey Fulton gave a warning to the people of America through his book, Washington in the Lap of Rome. In it, he details how the Roman Catholic Church flooded the new capital city, Washington, D.C., just after the American Revolution, with the intention of seizing control of the United States by covert means. Prior to the Revolution, the Revolutionary War, Catholics in America were forbidden to vote and could not hold political office because of the centuries-old conflict between Rome and England, an enmity so bitter that even the Catholic Mass was outlawed in the early English colonies. But once America declared her independence and the doctrine of religious freedom was written into the Constitution, the agents of the Pope moved quickly, building a Jesuit university, taking over hospitals, and moving faithful Roman Catholics into positions of power. In 1888, the situation was such that Fulton wrote, quote, "Romanism is the dominant power in the capital of the United States," unquote. In the 19th century, the author was convinced that if the Americans did not awaken to the problem, it would be a matter of time before Jesuit priests would rule our country and the Inquisition would come to American soil. Was there any truth to Fulton's warnings? This new edition of Fulton's book presents a 70-page foreword by documentary filmmaker Christian J. Pinto that attempts to answer that question. Pinto reveals the influence of Rome from 1888 to the present time, documenting the role of the Vatican during World War II with the development of the CIA, the Vietnam era, the Jesuit origins of communism, McCarthyism, the Mexican border issue, the rewriting of American history, the Catholic-dominated Supreme Court, the manipulation of the White House, and even the modern presidency of Barack Hussein Obama. Is our country being manipulated by Wall Street money men, as is so often reported, or by an ancient power that has longed to rule the world for more than 1,000 years? I will begin the reading of this book with three quotes that are contained in the opening pages. Quote, since the time the Roman bishop turned pope, he has actually done nothing but shed blood, and not only, as they boast, the blood of heretics, but also the blood of all the countries and people of Christendom. They have incited kings and princes, countries and peoples against one another, in order to gain and to confirm the blasphemous, false, forged name of the Pope, who wants to be the supreme head on earth in both spiritual and worldly affairs. Unquote. That quote from the great Protestant reformer Martin Luther in 1533. Another quote, toleration ought to be extended to all those doctrines that are not subversive of society. The Roman Catholics or Papists are excluded by reason of such doctrines as these, that princes excommunicated may be deposed, and those that they call heretics may be destroyed without mercy. Unquote. That from Samuel Adams in his work entitled The Rights of the Colonists in 1772. And a third quote from the author of the book, Romanism is the dominant power in the capital of the United States, by Justin D. Fulton. Now, we're going to begin the foreword of the book by Christian J. Pinto. Chris has been a guest on Inquisition Update, I think, 3 times. Chris is well educated and astutely capable of educating people about Rome's part, not only in history, in world history, but in the history of the United States. He is an accomplished documentarian. He is the owner of Adullam Films, a producer of many marvelous works for Christian people today. I will name a few. A Lamp in the Dark, and also The Hidden Faith of the Founding Fathers, and also The Wheat and the Tares. 3 video documentaries for Protestants today. I highly recommend all 3, and you may get them at Adullam Films, and I'll have more contact information later. But I also want to promote this book that is available now from Christian J. Pinto's Adullam Films, Washington in the Lap of Rome. Now the foreword by Christian J. Pinto. And this is probably some of the most powerful writing that I've read lately, coming out of modern-day researchers as to the influence of the Roman Catholic Church in our government. Christian J. Pinto says, In the late 19th century, a man named Justin Dewey Fulton gave a warning to the people of the United States through his book, Washington in the Lap of Rome. In it, he details how the Roman Catholic Church flooded the new capital city just after the American Revolution with the intention of seizing control of the country by covert means. Rome's ambition was the same as it had been in old Europe, to dominate all nations on behalf of the Pope. The Protestant Reformation began in 1517 when Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the church door at Wittenberg, Germany, an event that would change the world forever and rescue countless souls from the lies of popery. But by 1540, the Vatican struck back when the Pope commissioned the Jesuit order to launch the Counter-Reformation, a movement designed to destroy the work of the Protestant reformers and to bring the world back into the Dark Ages. This conflict of reform versus counter-reform would define the history of the Western world from that point forward. Again, this conflict of reform versus counter-reform would define the history of the Western world from that point forward. Very descriptive words. The conflict between the Protestant Reformation and the Jesuit-led Counter-Reformation has literally defined the history of the Western world since the creation of the Jesuit order. You cannot understand history unless you understand the role of the Jesuit order since their founding. And you can't even understand current events. You cannot possibly understand current events as they unfold in this country and around the world unless you understand the Jesuits' role in it. The Counter-Reformation was launched by the Jesuit order in 1540. The Council of Trent was the first shot across the Protestant bow. The Council of Trent, called the Bloody Jesuit-led Counter-Reformation Council of Trent, and if you don't know anything about it, I implore my listeners to study what came out of the Council of Trent. And that Counter-Reformation has literally defined all of history. The Jesuit-led Counter-Reformation literally defines all of history. You can explain all the wars of the world by understanding the history of the Jesuit order and the Vatican's attempt to conquer the whole world for the Pope. Now, continuing, it says, prior to the American Revolution, Roman Catholics in America were forbidden to vote and could not hold political office because of the ongoing struggle between the Pope and Protestant England. It was an enmity so bitter that Jesuits and other Roman Catholic priests were forbidden in certain colonies, and the Catholic Mass was outlawed. But once America declared her independence, and the doctrine of universal toleration was written into the Constitution, that is, religious liberty was written into the Constitution, the ancient enemy of all freedom moved quickly. The Jesuits built their university in Georgetown, Jesuit Georgetown University.
And today, there are 28 Jesuit universities, 50 high schools, 244 universities, and their 6 out of the 9 chief justices are Catholic.
And moved their faithful pawns, the Jesuits, into positions of power. In 1888, the situation was such that Justin Dewey Fulton wrote, quote, Romanism is the dominant power in the capital of the United States, unquote. If we think about the conditions in America today and how there is so many groups, individuals, organizations, and movements that work against the gospel in our midst, we remember how the Lord said, quote, "In this world ye shall have tribulation," John chapter 16 and verse 33, "and ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake," Mark chapter 13 verse 3. With these writings we are told, quote, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravening wolves," Matthew chapter 7 verse 15. Some of the worst enemies of the Christian faith seem to be those who profess an outward form of Christianity but often deny the gospel or oppose key doctrines that pertain to the salvation of our Lord. Many of our church leaders today lack the zeal of the Apostle Paul, who dared to say, quote, "If any man love not the Lord Jesus Christ, let him be anathema," Maranatha, in other words, "accursed, our Lord cometh," 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 22. Politics and faith. As Christians, the realm of politics is especially difficult for us. We continually find ourselves asking how much we should be involved in the political system and discerning what our responsibility is. Should we vote? If so, must we vote for a Christian? What if the person is not a true Christian, but holds to conservative values? Is it our responsibility to vote for the lesser of two evils? These are questions that challenge nearly everyone who claims Christianity as their faith and calls the United States their home. Politics in our country today becomes particularly treacherous once we discover leaders who visit churches during an election and profess the faith in Christ, but then seem to turn their back on God once they arrive in power. Such men are often supported by Christian ministries, by pastors and teachers in the churches, whose own faith is called into question once they yoke themselves to a political agenda. By endorsing a particular candidate as a quote-unquote Christian, the gospel itself is usually compromised because it must be altered or compromised in order to accommodate the unbiblical view of a politician. In modern times, a perfect example of coming up with what might be called a political correct version of the gospel has been the support that some evangelicals have for Republican candidate Mitt Romney, a well-known member of the Mormon Church. The support for Romney comes on the heels of a massive Take Back America campaign led by another Mormon, a New Age adherent, Glenn Beck, a Fox News propagandist who developed a tremendous following with the help of many evangelical leaders. Though a number of ministries have exposed Mormonism as a cult that clearly believes a false gospel, there are those who would ignore the chasm of doctrinal differences in order to justify their support for that individual. The problem, in our opinion, is not befriending someone who is a Mormon or even working with that person on some sort of social or political program. Rather, the problem comes when a professing Christian attempts to justify their association by erasing the lines between the two faiths and begins to argue that Mormonism is just another form of Christianity. Of course, this is done not only with Mormonism, but also with Roman Catholicism and Orthodox Judaism, all of which hold to doctrines that clearly oppose the true gospel. Let me reiterate, this author, Christian J. Pinto, rightly relates Mormonism, Roman Catholicism, and Orthodox Judaism as those which hold to doctrines that clearly oppose the true gospel. He's correct on every count. At this point in our history, universal ecumenism, the unification of all the world's religions, I will add, has become the orthodox religion of America. And those who wish to ascend to places of power in our system are expected to conform. Those who resist are treated like heretics and are quickly accused of bigotry and intolerance. It seems little wonder that true Bible-believing Christians rarely seem to be elected to office, while those who are often support policies that are designed to either diminish or destroy the Christian faith. We can appreciate these words from Martin Luther nearly 500 years ago, quote, "These are dangerous times, owing to seditious persons, false doctrines, and teachers. These mischievous persons creep about everywhere, and Satan does the same, trying to overthrow our faith," unquote. Martin Luther, 1532. If these things are so in our time, can there be something behind it? Is it mere chance that apostates, wolves, and unbelievers seem to be the ones who hold the power in the United States? And how is it that in their minds, in their hands, and the idea of liberty has become a weapon against Christianity, driving prayer out of the schools and insisting that all mention of God, the Bible, and the Lord Jesus Christ be abolished from our institutions and houses of government? As Charles Spurgeon lamented, quote, "Is nothing to be done? The gospel of Jesus is assailed by its ancient enemies. Let every true man come to the front and face the foe," unquote. Charles Haddon Spurgeon, in his work entitled The Sword and the Trowel, published August 1866. But what did Spurgeon mean by ancient enemies? And how do we recognize this foe? In turn, of all the warnings Spurgeon gave to the evangelical churchmen of his day, no alarm was more loudly sounded, no warning more vehemently given than his words against the harlot church of Rome. "No peace with Rome," was his motto, and he declared that the masterpiece of Satan is popery. Spurgeon wrote, quote, "The superstition of Rome is the worst of all evils which have befallen our race. May the Lord arise and sweep it down to the hell from whence it arose." Again, Spurgeon, in his work The Sword and the Trowel, published in 1873. Charles Haddon Spurgeon is known as the Prince of Preachers and is beloved for his words of inspiration and faith. But few who love his works today realize how zealously he opposed Rome's corrupting influence. Furthermore, most of his warnings came in the decade just prior to the publication of his book. Of this book, this particular book that we're reading, Washington in the Lap of Rome, these people were contemporaries, Charles Haddon Spurgeon and Justin Dewey Fulton. He says Spurgeon recognized the Jesuitical cunning at work in England, and as the reader will learn, a chief concern for Justin Fulton was the establishment of the Jesuit University in Georgetown near the heart of American politics. Washington, D.C., 2012, quote, "It has now been more than 4 years since Barack Obama threw an arm around Gregory Galuzzo in Iowa and confided that whenever anybody asked how his presidential campaign had so quickly assembled its grassroots operation, he would credit Galuzzo, a former Jesuit," unquote. Since his whirlwind campaign that ushered him into the Oval Office in 2008, President Barack Obama has repeatedly been referred to as a Manchurian candidate, engineered by subversive groups in the United States for the purpose of carrying out their hidden aims. While Obama is without question a great orator, 3 years into his administration have proven that he is not the New Age socialist wonder-working messiah that his supporters had hoped for. His leadership has proven to be ineffective, and has only driven the country deeper into a crushing debt crisis, which was the result of bailing out Wall Street money men while failing to help the poor and unemployed. Thanks to an onslaught of media propaganda, millions of Obama's deluded followers, who thought they could abandon working because they believed that he would give them welfare and financial aid for life, have watched in astonishment as he did more to help the wealthy and deny the poor than any Republican administration in American history. But was Obama truly incompetent, as many suppose? Or have his actions been part of a greater plan? Americans are beginning to wake up to the reality that the brightest and best members of our society cannot be as incapable as they seem to be. Some have argued that it is more likely that forces at work behind the scenes want foolish decisions to be made, so that the United States will eventually be brought to ruin. A belief that has been communicated by researchers whose work is published outside America's mainstream. Perhaps the best example is the title of the book, The Planned Destruction of America, by James W. Wardner. He contends that America is not failing, but being deliberately destroyed by subversive forces from within. And I can tell you who that subversive force is. Roman Catholicism, the Vatican, the Pope, and the Jesuits. They're going to make this country Catholic and bring about a new world order that is a rebirth of the old world order. The Dark Ages revisited. Now back to the book, Washington in the Lap of Rome by Justin D. Fulton, and the foreword by Christian J. Pinto. Americans are beginning to wake up to the reality that the brightest and best members of our society cannot be as incapable as they seem to be. Some have argued that it is more likely that forces at work behind the scenes want foolish decisions to be made, so that the United States will eventually be brought to ruin. A belief that has been communicated by researchers whose work is published outside America's mainstream. Perhaps the best example is the title of the book, The Planned Destruction of America, by James W. Wardner. He contends that America is not failing, but being deliberately destroyed by subversive forces from within. And I iterated before the break, who those forces are, what those forces are working behind the scenes to destroy this country. Rome has used this country, this once Protestant land, to conquer the rest of the world for the Pope. And this land, this bastion of American Protestantism, remains a threat to the papacy. That if the Protestant churches ever return to their Protestant beliefs, and shed their Jesuitical lies and come to reality, they'll realize that the Roman Catholic Church is the one destroying this country and the gospel all over the world, and there will recur a Protestant Reformation in this country. The Protestant Reformation almost destroyed the papacy. The gospel of Jesus Christ awakened the hearts and minds of God's people, and they came out of the Roman Catholic Church, and the papacy was nearly destroyed. Roman Catholicism was nearly destroyed. It was the best hope for truth in the world, the Protestant Reformation. And the Vatican realizes that if the Protestants ever wake up in this country, they could rear a new Protestant Reformation and finished the job they started 500 years ago at the time of Martin Luther. And Rome has decided that in order to keep control of this country, it has to be reduced economically, spiritually, politically, and in every other way to keep the people down, to keep the people subservient to the new Vatican-controlled government in the United States. That's what's happening. It's happening right before your very eyes. few people would even entertain the notion that the Vatican has anything to do with it. But if you'll finish listening to this broadcast and the complete reading of this book, I'll bring you a new awareness of what's really happening in the United States and the world. Next is a quote. It says, "The American people are being taken on one of the longest Trojan horse rides of history. We are being duped by our own leaders who have conspired against us. The declining American standard of living has been planned from the beginning. It is the result of planning at the very highest levels of American government. A plan to fail. A plan to create insecurity and uncertainty. A plan to make the American people serfs in the New World Order." Unquote. How often do analysts sit back and marvel at the ridiculous and unreasonable decisions made by American leaders? This has never been truer than it has been during the current administration. It appears that the members of our government are making choices designed to ruin our economy rather than to help it. Researchers who have tracked our inflation and rising debt crisis for years argue that the purpose of intentionally wrecking the United States economy is this: that a crippled economy will force the United States into a global economic system. Their warnings were shown to be manifest when the American housing market crashed. The press quickly reported that England, France, China, and the Vatican all called for an economic New World Order. A careful study of Rome's involvement in these things will reveal that the New World Order is simply the modern version of the old Holy Roman Empire, reclothed in Marxist and socialist garments, and carefully modified so that the blame for it can be placed on elusive secret groups, while allowing the Pope to walk gently in the midst of it as an angel of light. The great harlot works most effectively through other organizations, which are often condemned for the results of her manipulations. This is why prophecy warns us that the woman rides the beast. She guides it and controls it. Could this be the case with the Obama administration? Has the American president become a puppet for papal ambitions? The reader will find that the 19th century insights of Justin Dewey Fulton to be compelling on this issue. In 2008, a Catholic blog published an article about a Senator Obama's Catholic National Advisory Council, revealing that most of its members were Jesuit-trained politicos who were described as Catholic dissidents by a leading Roman Catholic conservative. Obama's advisors are essentially the left wing of the Roman Catholic Church in America, individuals who defend abortion rights, gay rights, higher taxes, etc. Shortly after it was assembled, however, several of the advisory council's members fell into public controversy, and from then on they went into the shadows and ceased to be mentioned in the press. The Catholic news agency later speculated that they had been quote-unquote dissolved because they refused to communicate with Bill Donahue and the Catholic League, or with others who attempted to contact them. Now, I want to stop and inform the listeners. Bill Donahue, if you're not familiar, is the guy on television that you see most often on Fox News, a Roman Catholic channel. Fox News, the Roman Catholic channel. Bill Donahue, the leader of the Catholic League, he looks like Archie Bunker, for those who have seen him before. You'll recognize him. He looks like Archie Bunker. He's a rabid pro-Roman Catholic. He thinks the Pope ought to rule this world, and he is the equivalent of the Jewish Anti-Defamation League. If you say a word in this country defamatory of the Roman Catholic Church or the Pope, you will receive the wrath of Bill Donahue. Nothing gets past Bill Donahue, and I'm sure he knows all about Inquisition Update and First Amendment Radio. Probably is responsible for some of my persecution, personally. But I can't prove it, so I'll continue. Bill Donahue literally controls the press. If anyone in the press says anything derogatory of the Roman Catholic Church, you can bet they will feel the wrath of Bill Donahue from the Catholic League. So just know who Bill Donahue is. Says the Catholic News Agency later speculated that these members of this committee had been dissolved because they refused to communicate with Bill Donahue and the Catholic League. In other words, they didn't cut Bill Donahue in on what they were doing, okay? And he says they were dissolved because they refused to communicate with Bill Donahue of the Catholic League or with others who attempted to contact them. But their dissolution was never officially announced. It seemed they only decided to keep silent and carry on their activities out of the light of the mainstream scrutiny. That's the way Rome loves to do her business. Out of the limelight. That's why she's so effective.
We're going to stop right here because of time. We're come to the end of the broadcast. The Ford to Washington in the Lap of Rome, 1888, by Justin Fulton. The Ford is written by Chris Pinto, and he's got 24 different subtitles. And this week we finished up with politics and faith, and then we covered Washington, D.C. in 2012. Tomorrow, we're going to start with the Jesuits, the Engineer Corps of Hell. So with that, and also I remembered at the beginning of the broadcast that I mentioned the title of the chapter of John Daniel's book, but I didn't mention the name of the book. It's The Grand Design Exposed. And also to purchase Washington in the Lap of Rome, you go right up to Grand Design Exposed, and you'll scroll down about in the middle of the page on the left, and you'll see a picture of the book. And you click on that, and it'll take you right directly to Chris Pinto, where you can purchase the book. I strongly urge that you purchase the book. Again, it's worth it just because of the foreword. 70 pages of riveting read, the best I've come across on what is actually happening in 2014. And so this is, like I said, a series of broadcasts that I will be leading up to playing the broadcast that I heard on Bald Eagle's talk show call, episode 144. I think we'll be covering this broadcast coming up. We'll be building to this broadcast, because the broadcast, Alan Bailey again is reading the Jesuits, Brothers of the Pyramid, Shaping Events During the 1700s, and the title of this broadcast tonight is The Jesuits, Brothers of the Pyramid, Shaping Events in 2014. With that, we'll see you tomorrow night on episode number 2 of this series. Thanks for listening.
Seems to be that this world is in a mess. Seems to be all life's just a test. Seems to be we think we've lived our lives. The best is clear to see that only God will judge and bless. Seems to be. Seems to be that we've lived our lives in lies. Seems to be we are born and then we die. Seems to be life. passes, it just flies, and it's clear to see that only God's truth will survive, seems to be. This world can bring fame, riches, mantles of honor and glory.